This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
How long gone? Chris Black coming to you live from the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, Second City, Freshwater, Chicago.
My bad.
Them jeans, what's up with you?
Speaking of where you're from, Glendale this morning was a very windy city. It was the windiest day in Glendale I've ever experienced in my life.
Okay, so did Bean and Margot catch flight? Did you catch flight? What did anything, was there tumbleweeds?
Girl, just about.
Were there tumbleweeds going down Brand Boulevard?
It was a very treacherous, you joke.
You think
but
it's funny?
My neighborhood is a war zone.
I mean.
The winds are whipping, palm trees and shit. You know, it's fine. I don't really care about a little bit of wind. But then when I'm walking the dogs, I have my boot on, you know, so I'm handicapable.
Mm.
You know, I have Bean, who's just like a snow dog mushing, just like dying to haul ass. So like 20 feet of leash going one direction.
Mm-hmm.
I have Margo on death's door. Can't walk. I walk 10 times faster than her in my boot. So I have two hands, both akimbo, like I'm in a movie shooting guns.
You're getting pulled like a damn cartoon.
I'm getting pulled like a cartoon. And then to throw on top of this, I'm also carrying like three bags of dog shit. I know. No fault but my own. And then I have my AirPods in. I'm standing here like I'm in Bad Boys 2, just like, you know, doing that shit. The wind is whipping in such a way that an AirPod flies out of my ear and into someone's yard.
And I want to be clear, you have the second gen that does have that extra part that keeps it in your ear. Mine fall out all the time. If I blow air.
AirPod Pro with the rubber noise canceling, it fits in so snugly. And then I had like an almost breakdown moment.
Wow.
Of just like, what the fuck am I doing right now with not with my life, because I feel good about my life right now, but just like at this very micro moment.
I feel good about your life too, Jason, but I think what's happening is that you're coming around on my anti-dog stance, but it's tough for you to swallow that.
I need to pop a couple Nutrafols. I'm in such a mood.
I think that you're coming around. And you're having a tough time dealing with it, because no matter what you think, you're still a dog father, and you're going to have to raise those little bastards no matter how you feel about it.
Yeah,
so you're
kind
of resisting.
I've never wanted a dog in my life. There was nowhere for me to come around from. I've always said I can barely take care of myself. What am I doing with a dog, let alone multiples? But you know, these are the lives that we live, and also, you know, maybe the universe was telling me I need to have these annoying little
not the universe.
Love creatures. But there's a bittersweet kind of moment, because Margo, the older dog, she's been Carolyn's dog for a long time. The dog's like 15 now. Carolyn's had her for at least 10 of those years. So this dog is like,
yeah, you're the stepdaddy that stepped up for sure.
What, the biological, of course, didn't bother. A tale as old as time. So I had to step up like Shaq Diesel, but all that is to say, this is her dog. You know, Bean was acquired. It was a COVID purchase. There was both of our stink on it. You know what I mean? It was a little bit more of a cosign, whereas Margo's. Through and through, this is your dog.
She brought Margo's a dog from her previous relationship.
yeah. So when Margo, like when we go out to a fine, nice dinner or a party, and we come home to see that Margo has peed on the rug, mm-hmm. because of her older age, she's no longer able to hold it. It's a thing that some of our older listeners can relate to. Mm-hmm. I feel so bad, but there's a little bit of, I mean, I don't feel satisfaction. I don't know. There's some kind of weird energy where I feel of just like when the dog pees itself and you have to rub their face in it to be like, this is what you did. Don't do this again. It's a more of like, you know, your dog peed on the rug. We got to clean it up. And this is a way for me to exercise kindness instead of being like, I mean, that's your dog, bro.
That's exactly what you should do.
No, because that is a bad idea in terms of my life.
It's a bad idea for your life. It's going great right now. I agree. That might throw a wrench in it.
Yeah, because I'm in a partnership. And lastly, I'll let you speak, Sway. my therapist last week brought this up a little bit. She made an incorrect reference to rapper Nas when she was actually
This dusty chick, you got to fire her ass. If my therapist is bringing up Nas, I'm deducting 100 from the Venmo.
She said,
made you look. Sorry. She said
she misrappered. She misrappered the reference, but she was her intention was to quote Tupac Shakur, because she said, Jason, I don't like your Nas-like mindset where you are feeling that it's me against the world. And I was like, as soon as she said that, I thought what you thought, which was like, this bitch is getting paid too much money to be referencing Nas. And then I was like, wait a minute, that's not even a Nas song. That's a Tupac song. It's just me against the world, baby.
You said,
But yeah, so it is not just me against the world.
It's you. You have a whole team behind you, Jason. I'm behind you. Carolyn's behind you.
And I feel it.
These dogs that are voiceless are behind you. Mm-hmm. You have several family members that I think like you. I'm not totally sure, but
some more than others.
Well, that's every family, am I right?
I'm known to poo-poo them in the trades.
I've experienced two things today that haven't made me super happy, and one of those is my flight from Chicago was delayed like an hour and a half.
Does the day end in a Y?
On the tarmac, and I got up to go to the bathroom. I got up to go to the bathroom, and up in 1B was friend of the show Sue Chan, who's here for the same J. Crew event we're doing tonight. And so mm-hmm. I go to the bathroom, I come back, and we're on the tarmac. We're not going anywhere. So everybody's kind of milling about, you know. Mm-hmm. And I start chatting. Sue and I chat for maybe 5 minutes. And then the guy that's sitting in the aisle gets up.
So Sue's in a window. Sue's in a window seat.
Sue's in the window.
There's a guy in the aisle seat, and you're standing in the aisle having a chit-chat.
Yes. Okay. And the guy gets up, walks by me to tell the stewardess to tell me to move because he doesn't feel like he has enough personal space right now. And I was like, you pussy bitch, say it to my face. If you want me to move man to man, just tell me to move. I'll move. It's not that big of a deal. But once you involve the stewardess, an innocent bystander, you pussy.
Okay, well, I have some so you when you said that Sue is in 1B, that means that there are no the distance between where he got up to walk and then to tell on you to the stewardess.
Yes. It's
it wasn't like you were sitting in the back and then he was able to go use the restroom and then peep in and be like, hey, this guy. You could hear him saying it or no?
Basically, somehow it feels more. Okay. It was closer than spitting distance. You know what I mean? Okay. That's how it was.
He got up, walked 2.5 feet, and then did the...
Yeah.
You could read his lips.
Yeah. And this is the guy who I'd seen waiting, you know, as we were waiting to board, having a conversation with no headphones on, screaming into the phone because he's like 60 years old. So I say...
Wait, he was 60?
Yeah, he was older, yeah. Yeah. Like, not.
Damn, you can't be 60 years old and saying personal space. If you're 60 and up and you say the phrase personal space, you gay as hell, bro.
No, that's honestly a dead ass. So I had to call him a fucking dork. I said, you're a fucking dork. And went and sat in 3B and continued my day. But then, you know, thanks to Delta, I had Wi-Fi on the plane. Mm-hmm. And I'm scrolling my usual channels. And someone I follow posted something. And they tagged us in it, mm-hmm. and it was a non-alcoholic aperitif brand complaining about the rates that they paid for advertising on this show. And I just want to say very clearly, if you don't want to pay the rates, then do not pay the rates. We have other people willing to advertise. You don't need to slander us on Instagram. I find it unfair, and honestly, that's not how business works.
This founder did say that we charged $1 million to to do ad reads, which is obviously an exaggeration.
Yes.
For the record, we did offer her a discounted rate as a friend and family member. So, you know, that part stung a little bit, but, you know, it was enough money to gas up the G-Wagon for a month, right?
I don't think so. I don't think it wasn't. I'll tell you this. It wasn't enough money to talk about publicly for us or them. So we're all fouled right now. We're all doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. But I just want to say, if you want to advertise on How Long Gone, get in touch with Ian from Talkhouse. You can join the ranks of people like BetterHelp, McDonald's, Nutrafol. I mean, we could go on, you know. And if you don't, if you're a small business that took on millions and millions of dollars of investment, wants to put some of that into our pockets, we would love to help support your brand. Mm-hmm. We would love to help signal boost what you're doing. We love creators. We love new businesses. We love startups. We love kind of telling our listeners about these important developments.
That's 1,000% true, bro. If you have a dope founder journey, I want to hear it, brother.
if you've done something super dope with cheap money you raised from VCs, we absolutely want to talk to you.
I like cheap money. That's a good name for my new Scott Galloway-esque podcast.
Cheap money with them jeans. All right, so we have a guest today on How Long Gone. I'm calmed down now. We have a guest today on How Long Gone, and he's got a new book, Atelier September, with our friends from Partimento. He's a chef. His name is Frederick Bill Bray, and he's kind of credited with sort of kicking off the Copenhagen kind of culinary scene. He's got Apollo Bar. He's got the Sophie Bakery in Berlin. And he's a very, it was nice, Jason, to talk to someone who's like kind of sensitive and thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of rare for us. I feel like
I agree. It is rare for us to have a guest that stops and thinks about what they're going to say. I think maybe if he is a listener,
we don't even do that. So
no. But it sounds like he's familiar with the show, and he has listened before, so he's familiar with my editing technique. So he knows that I'll clean it up and make it sound like no pauses happen whatsoever. But it was nice to see a person in thought and to consider. I guess it made me feel better whenever I would ask a question that in my mind sounded kind of stupid, or like, you know, trying to get a more of a punchline than a serious, contemplative, philosophical, existential question. And for him to be, pause, maybe do the two palms of your hands together in thought.
That's because he has three children and he understands patience, and he was able to exercise that with us as well. But no, he's great.
And he puts that patience on the plate.
He's a legend. He's a legend in Copenhagen. And if you want to learn how to make a delicious kind of light seasonal white asparagus dish, stay till the end.
Oh, yeah, I put him on the chopping block, and he delivered with a recipe technique preparation from my white asparagus that I was quite pleased with, and I will be enjoying for my mid-afternoon lunch snack.
Gordon Ramsay over here. All right, so let's talk to Frederick.
Korea World is a new cookbook written by Dookie Hong and friend of the show, Matt Rodbard, the New York Times best-selling authors of the book Koreatown.
Korea World is a vibrant exploration of the evolution of Korean cuisine, both in Korea and in Korea towns across the United States, with more than 75 bold, flavor-packed recipes and stunning photography.
The authors take an inside look at the exciting evolution of Korean food through stories of chefs, home cooks, as well as recipes that are shaping modern Korean cuisine.
The book begins in Seoul, where the barbecue scene is pushing into new territory and where the city's third wave coffee culture is exploding.
The tour continues with late-night food adventures in Los Angeles, my hometown, and stops into the kitchens of innovative chefs from New York City to Portland, who are putting modern spins on Korean classics.
Recipes include giant short ribs, whole fried smash, rockfish, and pineapple kimchi fried rice.
I'm sad I didn't get to name the foods and you did. Korea World is essential reading for anyone curious about the future of food.
Available wherever books are sold.
This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Babbel. I fancy myself a trilinguist myself, but it usually only applies when I'm ordering food in restaurants. So, you know, I'm picking up Babbel so I can have some more conversational Spanish, Vietnamese, and other languages. I feel like everyone knows the food stuff, but, you know, taking an extra step in case you're in a situation when you're traveling, you're in the hills of Oaxaca, you don't have service for your little Google Translate shit. Learn it the old-fashioned way with Babbel.
Do the work. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/howlong. Get 55% off, that's more than half, at babbel.com/howlong, spelled babbel.com/howlong. Rules and restrictions may apply.
That 50% off discount is great, as I am unfortunately fluent in broken knees.
Jason is only able to read in the sauna. It's one of his special gifts, so don't take that the wrong way. That's where he does his best work.
Yeah, your book is not read unless it's wet with my sweat and bodily fluids. Pages are stuck together, but not because the flavors were orgasmic, if that makes sense.
You never know. That's what you say.
That's true. You never know. I could come to your book, if that's what you're implying, Frederick. Is it pronounced Frederick?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Frederick. Just Frederick.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I was concerned about that. Sometimes I like to do my research and watch a YouTube video where I hear our guests say their name, so I make sure I say it correctly. When I did that for you, I only found videos with you never say your name, and it's all in Danish, so it didn't really help me very much.
Yeah, I'm digital, but not that digital. I'm still behind, kind of.
Okay, so you don't have like a manager that's telling you to make TikToks?
Yeah, no.
Okay, can we be your manager that tells you to do that?
Yeah. Do you not care? Do you just have no interest and you don't need to do it? Or do you think it's like, I'm at work all day, I don't have time to think about this kind of stuff?
He doesn't need more customers.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel deeply detached. You know, I have this sort of like anxiety. You know, in one way, I grew up with the dawn of social media, from like MySpace to Facebook to Instagram. And I kind of enjoyed the ride, and I enjoyed how we all got connected, you know, that you
I
could
too enjoyed the ride.
Share some detail.
Yeah.
But I think it's overwhelming. Yeah. It's overwhelming. And sometimes, you know, social media just completely knocks out your ability to think, right? You know, you just get completely overwhelmed. So
that's why I use it.
Yeah, to knock out your brain. Yeah.
Turn the old brain off. I mean, my brain is always on all the time. So it's not because I want to be stupid. It's because I'm so up here and I need to come back down to earth just so I could interact with other people.
I understand what you're saying, though. It can be a lot. Like, it doesn't bother me, but I also think I'm just conditioned. I'm not special.
I think it was a... It was a lot easier to maintain your MySpace top 8 when your only job was maintaining your MySpace top 8. And yes, you don't have a job and kids and retirement funds and all that shit. Mm.
Yeah, but still back then it was difficult. Like, how did you actually, Jason, how did you choose your top 8? Because it was always like, then you started with 4, then it became
very political. 8. It's very political.
Exactly, right? It was always political. You had to play someone you respect and someone you like, someone you're connected with, and someone that didn't follow you that was really cool. And
No, there was a chess game involved in that, and I think it did have to do with basically signaling to others that you were connected to people that were powerful and influential, you know? But then, like you said, not going too crazy.
But it's much like playing poker or something. You don't want to bluff too hard and be like, are you actually that close of a friends with George yeah, Clooney yeah. to put him in your top, you know, like a huge, like, I don't think that you are that very, you are that close with Lady Gaga or whoever it may have been.
It was like, it was Diplo.
Diplo.
Diplo was big. Yeah. Switch.
Yeah.
And then also having Tom. Tom was a hit. Like yeah. at one point it became like, I got Tom. You know, everyone got
I got Tom.
Throw Tom in there. Yeah, and then always the last one, much like when you have your like your top 10 favorite albums or movies, like you have all the stuff that defines you, and then you have one thing at the, you know, the last one which makes like the underground crazy people be like, oh shit, he knows about this thing.
Yeah, he's a real head.
I'm glad that you like Diplo and you know about Diplo. He was in my top 8 as well. Mm-hmm. After I met him one time in passing, I was like, guess who got bumped up to number 3? My best friend Diplo.
Yeah.
And like, I'm gonna have to move my girlfriend down a couple pegs exactly. to make room for Wes.
Yeah. That was But also the time when you started with your friends and they slowly slided down.
Mm.
You know, that was also like complicated.
Everybody could get cut. That's the bottom line. Everyone can get moved. This thing is not set in stone. It's a living document, as they say.
Friend group and community, but it was a little dark to see the fizz, you know. It's like we all know that we have a friend that we don't talk to that much anymore, and they're moving down the list on the top 8, but there's no physical evidence or proof of it. You don't make a statement. Yeah, there's no press release. You know, but this is the top 8 is like going into,
that'd be great,
which would be
like, I'm making a press release, hey guys, today I'm gonna change my top 8. I'm sorry, Anna, you're leaving. I'm so sorry, but you did really good. But
sorry, hold on. You guys go ahead.
Okay. Well, so I, like I said, I was reading a book in the sauna. You know, it's a very beautiful book. It is just as much aesthetic that I think that you're selling as the food and the recipes as well. There are interesting flavors going on and a lot of cool things going on, but, you know, the photography and the philosophy and the design elements, very, very Danish. But one of the final written words that weren't recipes or just like your own prose was about dreams. Mm. And you're writing about how the way you dictate your life is more or less based on your dreams. Like you have a dream about something and then you have the, you know, ability or privilege or just the smarts to do that and it ends up working. Mm. Which is a beautiful thing, and I think we should all live like that more often. I want to know what your nightmares are like though, because you Danish people are fucked up.
Mm. But it's funny because I dream a lot, and shit, like I had a funny dream the other day.
Let's hear about it.
But it was not my nightmare, it was my wife's nightmare. She came down, so we have 3 kids, right? And she came down to me and she was like, hey sweetheart, I just had like a terrible nightmare. I dreamed, you know, you left me and everyone left me. And, you know, it was only my business partner that wanted to hang out with me. And then I was like, wake up. And I was like, was she hot? And my wife was like, what? Like, the woman I left you from, was she hot? And she was like, fuck you. And then I was like, oh, but sweetheart, I was just like, I was in the middle of a dream. I was dreaming we were at our neighbor's fridge. And trying to like look into the freezer to select something for dinner. I'm sorry. I was just like,
sure.
I don't know.
So that's a pretty good, that's a great that's a Rodney Dangerfield level joke of like, the only reason why your business partner did not leave you is surely they have an injury or they're in a wheelchair or something. They could not escape you. Is the only reason why somebody would still be hanging out with you.
Yeah.
This is good stuff right there. I was just going to say most of my nightmares involve stress or anxiety. And it's never like a scary, awful thing, like a guy trying to kill you or anything. Mm. It'll be like me DJing and somebody, you know, like I'm about to DJ my first song after, you know, some crazy, amazing DJ that I look up to and respect, and the crowd is warmed up and ready for me to slide in. And I just I'm looking at the computer, I'm looking at the mixer, and all the buttons are different. I'm trying to play my song and I don't know how to use the equipment. It's like foreign to me. It looks like it's AI generated and there's all shit everywhere. And then that it'll last like 8 hours.
That's like too long.
And then my wife only has missing a flight nightmares. Like she's at the airport and she's going to miss a flight.
You guys are all fucked up. I don't have dreams at all. I don't remember anything.
You don't?
No.
You don't dream?
That's more fucked up.
No, I'm sure I do, but I don't wake up.
For a sober guy, you should be having more dreams, Chris.
I agree. Mm. But I don't know what it is. I don't really. I mean, I have a lot of dreams as far as what I want to do with my life, of course. But I mean.
No. We're not talking about that.
When I'm deep in sleep, I don't know, man. I don't really.
We're not talking about flying private. We're talking about dreams and nightmares. Yeah.
But I had a similar nightmare, and it was like reoccurring my whole youth, where at once, like when I was young, I was doing like a lot of shit. And I guess in Denmark it's different than America because you know basically you can fuck around without go to jail, right? But I stole a car once and I crashed it. And then this dream was like...
Hold on.
This dream
the,
was...
The dream is that you stole the car and crashed it, or you actually stole the car and crashed
it?
No,
that was the reality. That was the reality. But then the dream was that...
This is just like talking to Vadi. When I was 13, I killed a guy. I did 2 years.
No, and it was more naive. You know, it's like, you know, kids stuff, right? And then...
Yeah, mischief.
The dream was that every night I dreamt that I was like on a road and this car would kind of like follow me and it would kind of hit me. I was like running away from it. So I see your
that's a little,
the
that's
connection
a little...
to real life. Something like, you know, something in your life that is chasing you.
But the thing that's chasing you is going normal speed and you feel like you're trying to run as fast as you can, but your legs are going.
Exactly. Yeah. Something like that.
It's all slowed down. Let's talk about your youth then. It sounds like you were doing some shit like we were, but we went to jail. So I would love to know.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you guys are loose over there in Copenhagen, but
you're a restaurateur now, but I want to know about your line cook activities.
I guess.
Where do I begin? Where do I not begin? Is actually what I'd like to say.
You know, I grew up sort of like in an upper middle class neighborhood. I grew up very close to the tracks, like the rail tracks. Mm-hmm.
You were on the right side of the tracks.
It was very close to the layer, you know, where the trains would stop and where you would go and paint graffiti on the trains.
Uh-huh.
So there, I kind of like very early got into graffiti and. You know, in that world, you know, it's like skating, it's like creative, but it's also kind of illegal. But, you know, it's not, the intention is not to be illegal. It's more to be like rebellious towards society. So quite early, I got into some individual activities around.
I love individual activities.
Yeah, but.
I'll remember that one.
Yeah. But then at some point, you know. When I got caught a few times and it became more and more serious, what was
your graffiti name? Are you allowed to say that, or you still have warrants out?
This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Booking.com. Booking.yeah, from cozy bed and breakfast to trendy boutique hotels, with so many choices across the beautiful United States of America, you can book whoever you want to be. That can look like booking a 5-star hotel to indulge your luxury side. That's me. Or booking a remote cabin in the woods to explore your adventurous side.
So spring has sprung. The sun is out. The sun is shining. I can't wait to get to New York. Check out booking.com for your ideal hotel or vacation home, no matter where you go in the U.S.
Booking.yeah.
Book whoever you want to be on booking.com. Booking.yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding, like a dog. You know, you have a great head of hair, Jason. Can you speak on this?
Yeah, you hear this? That's my thick Nutrafol bottle shaking in there. You open up the lid, a little ASMR. It says, keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
It says that on the inside of the lid. Motivational. The pills look like a classic turmeric supplement, so it'll be familiar going down your mouth, but it doesn't have that sting of turmeric.
Mm.
What it does have is the sting of visibly thicker, healthier hair.
Let's go. Yeah, so if you have any hair thinning, shedding, or any other hair issues, Nutrafol has a proactive approach, and it has been known to improve hair growth, decrease shedding, add visible thickness, and it's a clinically effective formula. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off the first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HOWLONG. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled NutraFol.com, promo code HOWLONG. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code HOWLONG. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. I compromise every day, Jason, as you know, because that's kind of part of being a good friend and partner.
Oh, wow.
I am forced to keep food in my refrigerator against my will because my wife demands it. But when it comes to your health, Jason, there's absolutely no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, or their crossword puzzles just because they're available right now or because they take your slightly sketchy insurance. I know you have sketchy insurance, Jason. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and most importantly, prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. All these doctors are real, with verified reviews from actual patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists near you, or if you want to book one far away from you, that's your decision. Go to ZocDoc.com/howlong and download ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That is ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/howlong. ZocDoc.com/howlong.
No, it was not. I was not that good, you know. I was called Antique.
Antique?
Antique, like antique.
Like furniture?
Yeah.
Was it spelled exactly the way antique was spelled, or did you take any liberties with the spelling for it?
It was just like as in Danish, A-N-T-I-K, antique.
I had a feeling we were going to go with a K. I had a feeling based on the...
Okay, yeah. Much like how your name is spelled.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Straight up K. Something to think about.
Yeah, that's the way
okay,
to do
but
it.
You said you were not very good...
No, and no, but I wasn't, you know, I liked it, but I think that...
I mean, most people are bad at it.
But it's also like, it's to be really good at a craft, it requires a lot of self-esteem, you know, like really, I think to master this, even like to DJ as you do, you know, it really requires an ability to focus and plan. And I think that this was not really my strength. You know, I was always like very much into the social game, gathering people. Mm-hmm. So from graffiti, it moved into cooking, in a relation to also throwing parties, like house parties. And I also started DJing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was not really good at going to school. You know, like it didn't really work out for me.
Are we related? Are you my third brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, we have too many, we have too many similarities here. Yeah, I don't, hold
yeah,
on.
I put down the pen and I picked up the headphones, you know? I put down the books and I picked up the spray can.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and no, but you know.
And now look at us.
But you are a DJ, right? I remember you are, it's funny because we talked about Diplo, right? And I also used to DJ, and I remember Diplo, and I also remember Steve Aoki. I DJed with him once at where the fuck was it, in Barcelona or something. And you know, it's years ago, right? Like long time ago. But I think what is funny about the whole DJing is that you actually cater to a crowd. It's like kind of like this thing of like controlling a space, and there's a build up, or you know, maybe you just play bangers and the crowd loves you for that. But but I think that, yeah, I can relate to that a lot.
Yeah.
From a quite early time, I wanted to cook, but being in the cooking world was always so fucking horrible. You know, like,
yeah,
I'm 40 years old now, right? You know, like working in kitchens 20 years, 25 years ago, it was like crazy. you know, half of the people were alcoholic and the other half was like chauvinist and racist. So it was also like for someone from a relatively soft background, it was horrible to be in the kitchen.
Yeah, you're like, who are these? You're like, who are these freaks, Mom? I don't understand this. I was just trying to wash some lettuce.
I mean, you know,
these guys,
the back of house people traditionally were, you know, a little bit on the fringe. Maybe they had a little bit of a criminal past. And, you know, it was sort of manual labor back then. It's like, all right, no one will hire you. Here's a bag of onions, start chopping them.
Yeah. But do you think that kind of behavior, I mean, that kind of behavior still exists. It's just on a smaller scale because there's consequences now.
Yeah, but it exists. But I think we also develop. And, you know, the scene has developed and life quality in kitchens is better. You know, I have the deepest respect for everyone working in the kitchen. For me, it was just very tough being in it.
Yeah.
So I was always like, now you started saying my book were aesthetic and design and beautiful. And I think that, you know, I was always interested in a lot of other things than just being like the best chef in the world, you know. And I feel like all the bad experiences I had in the kitchen kind of, you know, so my kitchen story was I started when I was like 16 years old as a kitchen porter. And then I did that for some time and I tried to get a proper job. And I realized it was too tough. Then I went to high school and high school was a nightmare. And then I was like, shit, I'm going to be the best chef in the world. I'm just going to cook. And then I got a job at the best restaurant, like as an apprentice. And, you know, when I started there, you know, pretty quickly they realized that, you know, I was sensitive and I was, you know, I was always asking questions like, why do you do this? Why do you cook that sauce like that? Or
why are you guys so racist in here?
Yeah, exactly. No, but it was like this. There would be this guy standing like the head chef and he would be like, you know what? If an immigrant man raped my wife, I would have him killed. And I was like, guys, shut the fuck up. Like, you're so disgusting to hear it. And
it's literally like, bro, I'm trying to work here. Can you shut up, please?
And but it's like, it was just like, it was so toxic. And then obviously they fucking hated me, right? And then I you know, at the same time, I was having like good parties with my friends in the clubs and stuff. And I quit and I moved to London. I finished my education there. And when I came back, you know, I tried to cook, but I was just like, I didn't know who to look up to. There was no one that was cool. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to stop cooking. Like I literally just said like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I started making sort of like raves. And then from making raves, I obviously started DJing because this is how you made the money in the party scene,
this,
right?
This is my exact trajectory. I started throwing parties.
Yeah.
Because that's all I could do, and it was fine. And then every week, I would give $300 in $20 bills to some dumb bitch who is awful at DJing, male or female. And after a month of doing that, I was like, I will just pay myself to DJ, for Christ's sake. And then here we are.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting, and it's a beautiful journey. And then, you know, I was DJing a lot, and it was unhealthy, you know, like, and then actually, after the DJ gig with Steve Aoki doing Sona, like, I don't know how many, 15, 16 years ago, I was in it was at Macarena Club. I don't know if you know that one. Mm-hmm. It's like this small club with a function one.
I've never been, but I've heard of it.
I was this DJ, I can't say his name. He was like, hey, do you like to take acid? And I was like, of course I like to take acid. You know, I've never done it before. And then I just took a fucking crazy acid trip. And I was just gone for like, I don't know, like 12 hours or something. And then I woke up and I was like, where the fuck am I? And then, I don't know, I caught some weird disease and I was like sick for 3 weeks. And then this was kind of like, you know, you say that acid can change your life perspective, right?
Yeah, yes, it can. Yes, it can. Yes.
And then I was like, I started cooking again after that. I wanted to like do different stuff, so I got into art.
This is just from one nightmare acid trip changed your life
completely
for the better.
Yeah, but I didn't realize it at the moment. It was only when I was watching this Netflix with Michael Pollan about like drugs, and I was like, it's crazy. Like I did a crazy acid trip. I went home. It was when Michael Jackson died. I remember I was in my parents' house. I was like feeling like a complete loser. And I was like, shit, man, I gotta change my life. And then, I went a new direction. And it's a long story, but basically, when it comes to cooking, you know, like I think aesthetics in cooking, making a small, beautiful place, doing something that was out of the way. You know, when I opened at September, no one cooked like that in Copenhagen. It was like it was only Michelin restaurants, and I think for me, when I did that, it was a reflection of like cool, funny, small Japanese restaurants, you know, where there's one guy cooking, or like the cute little French cafe, or all those things. I just wanted to express. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what money was. I didn't know what tax was. I didn't know how to pay salary, you know, all these things. I didn't care. I just wanted to make like a beautiful, interesting restaurant that was not like a Michelin restaurant, a place where you guys would come and hang out and you would be like, oh, this is cool. What's going on here? And you feel at home, and you know, like a very naive approach to just create.
Yeah, but I think when you're, I think with that kind of, you know, that approach, you can only do that like once in your life. You know, so if it works,
only once.
If it works, you're good. If it doesn't work, it's a problem.
Well, yeah. I was gonna say many people have that same exact idea of like, I don't know anything about business or taxes or employees or HR, but I just want to do this thing. And then, you know, 3 months later, they're, you know, in $500,000 debt and it's a nightmare. So like, obviously, what do you remember, if you could pin down one thing or one moment that worked or that made this weird, not very smart from a business perspective plan actually work out?
I guess when you are educated as a chef, you have like a very fundamental training in how to make money on food. And I obviously got that. So I always knew, and I also worked as a professional chef. So I feel like I always had sort of like basic rules to stick to.
Was it hiring hot people to work there?
No, because it was only me and my cousins, and you know,
he's like, actually, yes, my family and I are very good looking, but
I'm very hot, but I didn't take a salary at the beginning. Of course, you know, we were just getting started. Was it a certain fig leaf plant that just brought the customers in? A citrus presentation?
I think it was many things. Now we started talking about Instagram, and I think that we opened 10 years ago, and at that time, it was kind of the time when everyone was walking around with their phones looking for something to take a picture of. And actually, September is a place that is designed from, you know, like we went to the space, we looked at it, and there was a lack of seats. And then we decided to place these like marble tables in the window. Mm-hmm. And I think with those tables, the natural light and the food being beautiful aesthetically created this sort of like something that you could take a picture of with your phone.
Photogenic. It was a photogenic place, and everything kind of fell in line.
Yeah. At the same time, it was also everything else, you know, like your life. If it's the only thing you got, like, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like I was completely invested in it, and I wanted to make it work.
It worked because it had to work.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I think it was also like, it was good. It was like the filtering of 10 years of diverse experiences, failure, success, you know, a lot of different networks. You know, it was a blend of art people, fashion people. At the same time, I was cooking at a lot of art galleries, and you know,
yeah.
I guess you know how it is.
Yeah, I would say that's, I mean,
sure.
That's part of the reason this podcast has worked so far, is because Jason and I did so much stuff before, and there's so much, you know, you have a network, you have different people that are interested in what you're doing, and it does make a difference than fully starting from scratch.
Yeah, and you were describing the aesthetics and like some elements of your spot, you know, like the marble tables and the windows and things like that, and it did sound familiar to other cafes that I may have visited the last time we were in Copenhagen. Mm. Do you think there are any other places that have maybe tried to copy your style at all? Or are there any, have there been any cafes or restaurants that have popped up since you opened?
He's like,
that have maybe adopted some of your sensibilities?
How much time do you have? Yeah, how much time you guys got? 2-3 hours? I can get you a list.
What is in, now, you live in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, I do.
And you know Squirrel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we started kind of at the same time without knowing each other. And in some way, I feel like at the time where we started, there was something missing in gastronomy, like a casual, playful, fun, cool gastronomy. Mm-hmm. We were very lucky to be a part of the beginning of sort of like a movement in food. So obviously there is a lot of people that have, you could say, copied, but also got inspired. And I think that, you know, food has completely changed, because when I started, it was only for chefs. Now it's like, you know, as fixie bikes and DJs and whatever other cool stuff, you know, natural wine, and it has become sort of like a lifestyle thing. And I can see a lot of the people that open restaurants are from a different background. A lot of the people that do like an olive oil company or coffee company, they come from like backgrounds of art directors or fashion. And in some way, you know, I think it's good, because it's adding a lot of energy to the scene. So I don't feel like people copied me, you know, like it's just nice to be in a scene where stuff is happening.
Yeah, it's interesting when you brought up Squirrel and you opening, you know, 10 years ago around the same time, but you know, you weren't copying each other. You're on different parts of the world, and it happened. And I think you guys did that because it was sort of a reaction to what was going on in the world, and you saw a hole that needed to be filled. So it was sort of a rejection of the old model and a reaction to create something new. And now currently we're kind of in a period where we're maybe doing more copying than discovering and identifying a hole that needs to be filled, perhaps.
Exactly. And I think it's super interesting. And I think it has something to do also with social media. Like, you know, people put a lot of power into social media. Like, you know, you can look in food, there's just like food trends. And then everyone does like a fucking burrata with some powder on top. Or, you know, like stuff, like it's just the same thing everywhere. And, you know, I'm also sick and tired of it, because, you know, in some way I feel like I started doing this cooking, you know, there's a reason for everything I cooked at Atelier.
You do have 5 burrata recipes in your cookbook. Just to let you know.
Exactly. And there was at that time when I started doing it, there was a reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the reason is kind of gone now, right? You know, but for me, you know, I had a kitchen without heat, without the ability to really cook. So, you know, obviously I had to cook with what was possible. But also at that time, there was no dishes like that. And I'm saying that...
No, for sure.
It's not a critique of the product or even myself, you know. I'm also starting to get tired of it. I'm just... The thing is just... What is creativity? How do we spawn creativity? And how do we actually add energy to the scene? You know, because I guess you guys are also very reflected about, you know, creativity. You know, like you could ask yourself then, is a copy interesting or is it relevant? Mm.
No, you're right. Yes,
maybe some people are very good. Some people copy are even better at branding themselves and selling it. And then they take it all the way. And then, you know, they get much more out of the idea.
Yeah, they don't necessarily perfect it.
So sometimes the remix is bigger than the original.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great way to put it, Jason.
It's a great way to put it.
I want to understand, Jason and I, so I've been to Copenhagen a couple times. Jason and I were there together, and it was summer, and everybody told us it was going to be amazing, and it rained the whole time. It was a fucking nightmare. But besides the point, but we're both, the breakfast bun is so fucking good, and it's so simple. Why doesn't that exist everywhere? I'm surprised that hasn't been an export from Denmark.
Well, first of all, Chris, you should know his version of that is a little bit more elevated than the standard.
Sure, of course.
And what we're talking about, if our listeners have never been, it's basically just like bread of some kind. It might be the thin kind of toasted you know, Scandinavian or Swedishy kind of bread with the seeds and all that stuff, or it could just be a hamburger bun looking kind of bun with some really good butter and a little bit of cheese on top. But yeah, that it's the one food from Copenhagen that I still think about all the time. And I went to Noma.
Yeah, it's just a special, I don't know. Is there a magic to it that we don't understand, or is it just like combining great things and it works?
I think the magic is you motherfuckers eat cheese, bread and butter every morning and you're not fat. While we have like a blueberry yogurt shake and we're all obese.
You're right.
So
though.
We just That's asked you 11 That's questions. Awesome. If you could answer those in order, please, Frederick. Thank you.
Okay. So there is the French paradox.
Yeah.
Did you heard about that?
No. What is the French paradox? Please.
I don't remember. It's something about like people in France, they eat much more fat than people in America, but they are less fat. And then it's something about the eating culture. Like sitting down at the table, spending time, drinking wine, you know, not being...
Yeah, like how does everybody just eat French fries and wine every single day and they're all skinnier and all they do is smoke cigarettes and eat cheese and French fries, yet they're way much skinnier than anyone else. And it has something to do with like the the mysticism of the attitude and the spirituality and like the way that you are looking at food as a... You know, like you're not doing a bad thing. It's not a shameful act. That's where, you know, fat could be accumulated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm eating French fries because they're delicious. And that's why I'm not getting fat.
Yeah.
So you guys have a Copenhagen paradox.
Yeah. But I think like good products, first of all, like, you know, a lot of the bread and butter and cheese you get in Copenhagen, it's a nice sourdough bread. And we are so fortunate to have like a really good farming scene. We have like super interesting grain producers. So you get good flour, you work with sourdough, which is like a natural bacteria. You get a nice butter and a super nice cheese. And, you know, good products that you consume always taste good, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just feel like, yeah, if we tried to do it, it would be like a Starbucks version and it would not hit the same. That's what
I mean. There's
like
good places in America that offer those same things, I guess. But I think it really is more of like the mental part of it, or like the shame part of it, where, you know, I could go to Justa or Jelena or whatever and get really amazing sourdough bread and really amazing butter and really amazing cheese. Mm. But no one in Santa Monica is going to eat that every single morning of their day, because they're going to be like, that's insane. I'm going to have...
Yeah, it's a mental thing. No, I think you're
but
right.
But maybe it's also like what is added to the dish in Denmark is, you know, I travel a lot to the States and all over the world. And I feel like what is unique about Scandinavia is that there is this fairness to Scandinavia. You pay a lot of tax, but, you know, everyone kind of have a okay life. And you don't have the shame, you know.
Yeah.
Like, no, but like if you go to Justa or Jelena, you see homeless people everywhere. And you're like, it's kind of also like a horrible thing to be witness to, right? You know, people in misery, right? But, you know, if you go to a bakery in Copenhagen and you see like the girls and the tourists eating, you know, bread with cheese and like
it's a better no, it does it feels better.
Okay, so socialism is better for obesity, is what you're saying? Maybe.
Yes, perhaps. I don't know.
He makes a point.
Yeah,
he makes a fair point.
Capitalism is, you know, you're high on the hog or you're low on the hog. There's not much in the middle nowadays. So that is something. What you brought up is something I've never thought of or considered. It makes a lot of interesting sense.
And there is I guess perhaps in all cultures, there are social dumping, you know, like the less money you have, the more shit you get, right? You know, and the more privileged you are, the better stuff. Like, you know, to go to Whole Foods or Erewhon Market, I guess it's not a privilege like a mother to two with a low income can afford, right?
No, you're right.
Yeah, and also when we were in Copenhagen, we were two blocks away from a 7-Eleven, and Chris and I would walk there to like go get water but I would look at the food, and the food at like the food at 7-Eleven is, you know, subhuman. It's pig slop. It's it's crazy.
You get a taquito from the 7-Eleven on Holloway, and you might not wake up.
But a lot of Americans have to eat it. They're on the go. They need some food. It's delicious. It's what you do, and that's a problem. And you know, I'm speaking from a privileged position. I know how to cook and get good ingredients, so I don't want to poo-poo them. But going into 7-Eleven in Copenhagen, a great selection of good looking food, and I feel you could just look at it and be like, this, there is some nourishment and nutrients in here.
No, that's the thing. The visual difference is crazy. That's what strikes me almost more than the taste is like, wow, this looks appetizing and ours does not. It's very, very simple. Right. Very simply. That's
in America, it looks like somebody has a cardboard box full of hot dogs and they just dump it onto the rollers like you're feeding pigs in a trough. But you can tell that the person working at the 7-Eleven in anywhere in Amsterdam maybe is, they have a little pride in their work because they're getting paid a living wage to do this job. And it's.
Yeah. But I think it is. But there's also, you know, this thing. I grew up in a middle upper class, whatever. But, you know, I could still paint graffiti. I could still be friends with the hood rats. And I became a chef and they became lawyers, right? You know, so there's also like.
Yeah, sure.
They had the opportunity to do that. Break the social. I think that's nice to know. Also, now when I have kids, you know, it's like this.
You have three kids, right?
Yeah.
Bro. Yeah. That's a lot of kids.
Let's talk a little bit about your kid having.
I know that they're good to you over there when you have kids. There's some financial implications that are nice that we don't have here. But three kids seems like.
Do they make the bicycles that have three baby compartments on them? Do you have a bicycle that fits all three?
Yeah.
You're like, actually, yeah, I do.
I got an old school for the weekends too.
Yeah, you got. All right, so you got three kids. How old are they?
4, 3, and 1/2 a year.
Oh, okay. So they're all pretty small. Okay. Do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think you're finished, or could you add more to your brood?
I don't know. It's a good question. You know. At the moment,
he's like, that's not really up to me personally.
Yeah, he's like, it's not up to me. I have a wife.
Yeah, no, but I think that perhaps, but at the moment, it's enough, you know. Yeah, no, but it's like,
yeah,
they're extremely fun to be around. You know, I couldn't really have imagined how it was before I had them, but me and my wife, you know, we live fun and chaotic life, and you know they blend into it, and we sort of like did a nice model where there's time for everyone, and you know we work close together. She has a fashion brand. We collaborate on everything. So you know, I guess if you would live in a normal life, would you had like a 9-to-5 job? Mm-hmm. You know, it would be less fun, okay. But you know.
So you're saying as long as you're cool and successful, it works out well.
Or maybe even if you take the choice to prioritize your kids in your life, you know, it could also be move to the countryside and just like grow your own vegetables. And because I think it's just like finding a good way.
No, I hear this from friends. I mean, I hear this from friends that it's like you just decide how you want it to be, you know, and if you want them to be involved, you bring them everywhere, and that's just what you do, and it works if that's what you want. You know, it's a decision you just have to make.
You mentioned that you just turned 40. Have you noticed now that you hit this age where you're having kids, and both you and your wife have had your career going? How have the kids influenced? You know, does she have a baby line? Or is she making cute little beanies? Are you going to do a cookbook for kids, or like how have the kids influenced your home cooking, things like that?
No, not in that like direct way. I think kids has reminded me about the importance of doing stuff you really like, and reconnected me with creativity in a way that I couldn't imagine. You know, like I think in some way they made me. Made me stronger. After I've had kids, I want to be more creative. I want to work closer with brilliant people, you know, maybe has less time for less brilliant people. I don't know. Like, I think in general, also the 30s was like pretty hardcore because I wanted to do so much, you know, and commercial stuff and all these, like, I think there's been so much shit going on. And now, like, I'm just like, I want to make something really good. And it doesn't involve everyone, you know, like, and, you know, it can be a beautiful jazz concert. It could be a beautiful dinner, but it's also just like being around energy, because kids are pure energy. You know, like when you wake up in the morning, they're like explosion and they talk about things, they experience them. And I think that's something, you know, they are teaching me that. But, you know, you also learn that all the baby shit, it's just like commercial stuff. It's just like, you know, it's the biggest market, like baby clothes and
for sure
baby things, you know, and basically they just need a little bit of clothes, right? You know, they are happy in nature, you know. It's like, I don't know, it's but kids are cool, you know. I'm a big fan of kids, kids energy. It's really cool. I like
no it. you have a good attitude about it.
Well, speaking of creativity, a couple food questions. Number one, we were talking about bread and butter earlier. I feel like bread and butter, and a perfect piece of bread and butter is my favorite single bite of food I can have. Do you have one?
Yeah. Yeah, it's related. Like, I think stuff like that, bread and butter, or, you know, in the summer, I forage mushrooms and also like fried mushrooms on bread. Stuff like fresh strawberries or like stuff that really is full with energy. But you know, the simple pleasures are the best, you know, or like a simple porridge, or, you know, it doesn't have to be so complicated.
Okay. So the maybe like your Kyoto grapefruit, like a just natural produce served, picked at its peak ripeness, served with the least amount of manipulation to it. I agree with that. But also your book said to blend eggs in a blender. And I feel like that
is against it.
I feel like that bruises the eggs too much. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's a good observation. And I like it. I like what you're saying. You know, my teacher, he was cool, like the chef I worked for. And I remember one day he took me to there's like this window at the restaurant, and he was standing with a cauliflower, and he said, "Frederick, look." And he took his knife and he inserted the cauliflower into the core of the stem, and he would kind of like twist it and break out one piece. And then he took this piece and he was like, "This piece is for the lady at table 7. And then, you know, he would break another one for the man at table 7. And I was like, I remember just being there, like, okay, this is brilliant, right? You know, because like you feel it, right? You transport energy from one person to another. The reason why we blend the eggs and we pass them is kind of to remove these like very small parts, like that is the small foster or something from the egg. But I agree that there's something brutal about mixing it. I agree. It's good. It's a good critique.
Thank you. I wanted to also ask, how often do you use a piping bag at home?
You know, not that often, but from time to time.
I was only asking because your book, I feel like half the recipes in the book called for a piping bag.
Yeah.
And which is a chefy thing to do for a kitchen, but maybe not so much for a home thing. Mm. I like to pipe myself.
Mm. Don't believe the pipe.
But honestly, I do like to pipe. It's a beautiful, elegant way to present.
Me too. But you know, I feel like this book, there was two targets for the book. One is people at home that like to cook. But I also felt like when you have a place like Atelier September, there is also some sort of like generosity to actually open up and say, this is how we did it. Because as you said, a lot of people have copied us and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's nice to share it and give them insight. Like, how do you make this pancake? What is the philosophy of doing these things? So I think also as a reader, you can also filter it and say, oh yeah, of course, we don't need a piping bag for that. I'll just scoop out the yogurt. But it will not be the same look.
Yeah.
But I think there's...
You can do it that way.
No, I think it's good because it's like, hey, I've, you know, there's so many restaurants or cafes where, you know, like the squirrel cookbook is kind of the same where it seems obvious. Like I'm looking at the plate and you're like, I know how what all these things are and I know how to make them, but I want to know exactly how you do it down to, you know, the 10 milligrams of this and the one thingy of that. And once you make it exactly how you make it, and then from there you can, you know, steal it and change one thing and make it your own and put it on your own menu.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I'm sure has happened to you before. Another question, white asparagus and green asparagus. Is there really a, what's the flavor difference there in your mind?
Oh, it's very big.
Oh, damn. Very big?
Yeah.
It's very big.
It's very big. It's very big. Yeah, because, you know, the white asparagus, they are not exposed to sunlight. So that's why they're white, because the photosynthesis is not active.
I didn't know that.
And they are sweeter.
Mm.
You know, they are sweet. And then the green asparagus, they are obviously filled with photosynthesis. So they are much more kind of like herbal in the taste, you know, from... Now, I know you don't like matcha because I heard a program about that, but, you know, the sense of the taste of matcha is like herbiness is there, which is also photosynthesis. So, and they are like the green asparagus, they are more like, you know, depending on how you cook them and the quality and the species, they are more towards like green peas or broccoli, where the white asparagus, they are more like, not a lot of stuff tastes like white asparagus.
I have some white asparagus in my refrigerator right now.
Nice.
What do you think I should do?
Mm.
I mean, it was not a brag. It was only from Whole Foods. It was not from. They're not really. They're not as girthy as I'd like them to be.
How thick are they? It's a little finger or a thumb.
I would say I've seen the fat boys. We'll give them a 6 out of 10.
Okay, so they're relatively big. So first of all, I would peel them. And then, do you have a butter?
I do.
Yeah. Do you have a orange?
Yeah. Citrus is in season right now. It's really pumping.
Yeah. And maybe sage.
Okay.
Sage. So orange and sage. What do we do after? What do we do once he's got his ingredients ready?
So I would take water, salt, butter in a sauteuse or a pot and put the asparagus, a slice or two slices of orange and sage, and I would just like cook it and constantly add a little bit of water so the butter doesn't split until they are tender. And then crack the black pepper and maybe a little bit of like parmesan or something like that. That's a nice simple dish.
That sounds good. I like this.
Yeah, and you get like the sweetness and acidity from the orange, you can season with a little bit of lemon juice, and the butter adds the fattiness that embraces the asparagus, right? And sage is always nice, and parmesan for umami.
Yeah.
So that would be good. It would be a good dish.
Okay.
Damn.
To do.
That was great. Thank you for actually using your brain and doing a good job at that. A lot of people, when I ask them a question like that, they give a half-assed answer, and you did a good job. So, but I've not done a lot of kind of butter basting or pan sauteing like that with butter and water. So the water keeps it from splitting, you say?
Yeah, but the thing is, you don't want to fry it. You actually want to, there is kind of like this level between water and butter being split and then emulsifying. So it's kind of like, it's like when you cook pasta and you add a little bit of water and
the starch
butter to the immaginatura, and you kind of see this sort of like saucy texture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when you start adding cheese. So you kind of like develop. So it's kind of like an integrated sauce in the cooking. So you release the juices from the asparagus into the... So everything stays there, right? So asparagus taste becomes a part of the orange and the butter,
and peeling the asparagus will help. Peeling the asparagus will help.
Yeah, so you have to peel them. Yeah, you have to peel
or
them.
Else the fiber. White, you have to peel
because otherwise they will not be good. So you have to peel them.
You can make Carolyn do the peeling, Jason. You don't have to do that.
I love to peel. Elegant strokes.
It can be meditative, I'm sure.
Of course.
We're coming back. I think we're coming back to Copenhagen, and I want to, now that I know that you come from a DJ background, I think we need to plan a party at Apollo Bar where you and Jason go back to back. I think that's if you're up for it, if you're up for breaking out the USB sticks.
My issue is I don't have a platform at the moment. You know, like DJing requires so much energy, like really.
It doesn't really.
No, but you know, you have all the stuff there, right? You know, even like for me, I don't even know how to get the fucking music into the USB plug. You know, I'm like,
okay.
How do you do it? Can you, like, I don't know, like, what is it, this
how do
program?
You do it?
And every time I do it,
okay,
I do it wrong.
You taught me how to cook my white asparagus today for lunch, and I will teach you how to move the MP3s from your computer to your USB stick using a software called Rekordbox. It sounds easy, but it's one of the worst pieces of software of all time.
It's so, I have it, I hate it, and I've done it so many times. And every time I go there, and it's like, you have one track on your USB plug. And I'm like, this can't be fucking true. You know, like, it's so, like, this is like,
every week,
it's a monster.
Week, there's a new update. There's a new software update weekly, and each update is, you know, 48 gigabytes. You know, and it doesn't change the app whatsoever. It's a nightmare, and I'm sure that in the next couple years they're going to use some sort of AI technology to make it a much more easier process. It can't be this fucked up.
But it's also it's complicated, right? Because then at the same time, everyone, including myself, is using what is it called, Spotify and iTunes and iMusic and all these platforms where you no longer own the music anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're like, oh, I really like this track. I have it on vinyl. I have it on Spotify. Okay, then you have to find out, where do you buy it? And then you have to buy it because you can't take it from your iTunes to, and then you have to, this is so complicated.
I know.
It's easier to DJ on vinyls, I guess.
Damn.
So like,
I like your attitude. It's like, fuck it. I'm not going to deal with any of this shit.
It was the easiest back when, in 15 years ago, when we would just go on all these blogs.
I miss it so much. It was brilliant.
The Z-Share mega upload.
But it was also truly, it was very creative.
It's hard. There's still places you could steal music.
No, but I don't think it's fair to steal it, but you know.
Of course not.
I'm sure you can remember that time where you would also have all the, you probably had a blog. I don't remember, but there was like, you did a lot of edits, right? You
know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember. I think I have.
Yeah, I was in the blogosphere.
Yeah, but no, but it was also cool because at the same time, you could also find like a blog with amazing old jazz, you know, like.
You could get into specifics.
Mm-hmm. Arden Central, Chicago. You would like get so crazy stuff. Like, and now you just rely on the algorithm from Spotify and you're like, you have no relationship to it.
Yeah, it used to be like just some guys like, I took 10 records that Dilla sampled for this thing.
Exactly.
And I ripped them all onto high quality wave files and here they are for free.
Yeah, all the old disco tracks. Like there was this brilliant post with all the tracks that Daft Punk based their tracks on, like Coca-Cola bottle and all these. And it was, this is interesting because you get more smart, right? And I don't know where to find that anymore. Maybe you guys can advise me on that because I'm like, when I open my computer, I open it and I go to like fucking New York Times or something. And you're like, okay, what's up? And you're like, there's no energy anymore. Like, where do you get the information from the internet?
I mean, that is gone to an extent. Like, I wasn't into that kind of music, but I think during the blog boom, a big part of it was music and downloading music, you know? And I just think that's just, now that we pay $10 a month to have it at the tips of our fingers, I think that most people aren't DJs. So there's not like a super big need for what you're talking about anymore. I think when it happened the first time, it was because it was happening for the first time. You know what I mean? So everybody was so excited about it. And I think now it's more of a utility and not many people need it. I think that's the issue.
Yeah. There's places where you can buy it, like Beatport, but you know, it's stupid and it's just like awful dance music. You can go on Bandcamp and buy music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bandcamp's probably the best place, I would say, to support independent artists and buy it. But yeah, I mean, it's very difficult in 2024 to go on the computer and like, I want to give money for an MP3 file. Why can't I do that? It's a damn shame.
Frederick, thank you for joining us today on How Long Gone. It was a pleasure. Guys, if you're in the market for the Atelier September cookbook, published by our friends over there at Appartamento, thank you, Marco, for setting this up. It's available now, or is it sold out and we're reprinting?
I think it's just available again.
Okay, good. Great. I got my copy
back on the shelves
at Mass Books in New York. I'm sure it's all over the globe. Thank you for joining us, and we'll holler at you about Copenhagen. We'll set something up.
Yeah, please do that. It would be nice to see.
Yeah, thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.